Hi guys, welcome back to Making a Dietitian. This is Cassie Blanford and I'm here with my roommate Reagan Neal.
Hey guys!
And today we will be starting our life cycle session. And so we're going to be talking about preconception and pregnancy. So a very important class that you're going to take is going to be Nutrition Through the Life Cycle. It can have any sort of name, but it's basically going to be covering exactly what it says, which is your life cycle. And this was personally one of my favorite classes as it took a very broad nutrition recommendations and made them specific for each age range. It also covered conditions and interventions for diseases at each life stage. My plan for these episodes is to cover two age groups per episode, going through the main topics covered in the book Nutrition Through the Life Cycle by Judith Brown. Today, I plan on covering preconception and pregnancy, but this episode is not reserved only for females or those capable of conceiving. If you plan to work in a clinical setting or counseling patients, you may need to advise clients during fertility counseling, as diet and fertility can go very well hand in hand. This is also a warning that we may be covering sensitive topics concerning weight and conception, so please be mindful. So obviously we're going to start first with preconception. This is the stage of life before pregnancy, and the ability to produce children begins after puberty, during which the human body begins to produce the necessary hormones and functions to conceive a baby. There's a lot of information that you will want to know dealing with the physiology of the reproductive system, but I am definitely not going to be the one to cover that. I don't think I could cover that in everything that you need to know. So basically pay attention whenever you take a physiology class or this life cycle class, because I am not going to give you that information. And I know Reagan's not either.
Nope.
So
business major.
Yeah, definitely doesn't know anything about that. So the first thing I want to talk about is how undernutrition or malnutrition is associated with the rapid decline in a woman's ability to conceive. Basically, once a woman begins to receive adequate nutrition, her ability to conceive is going to be increased as well. But if you have like a very low body fat or just you're not getting enough nutrients, your body is not going to be putting energy towards your reproductive system. Sorry, you can probably hear the growling. It is the puppy we have in our house. So you're going to hear her probably throughout this whole episode. But basically, this is something I'll talk about in my session whenever I talk about athletes. But if you are someone who it has like a really low BMI, anywhere under 20 is typically what we're looking at, you are probably not going to be intaking enough energy to put towards your reproductive health. So your body is just like focusing on other things, like functioning regularly. So you're not going to be in an active moment of being able to reproduce. So women who are underweight may have delayed time to conception and amenorrhea, which is how I'm going to pronounce it. It might be wrong. Other people pronounce it how it is. That's where you aren't going to be having your period regularly or at all. And men who are underweight may suffer from a low libido and reduced sperm count. So conditions that are associated with undernutrition are caused by a negative energy balance in which the body does not have enough energy to put towards the reproductive system, as it's already struggling to put energy elsewhere. Like I said earlier, BMI, usually less than 20, may lead to hypothalamic amenorrhea, which is when a woman no longer has their menstrual cycle. And the menstrual cycle is not just talking about their period. It's talking about all of their menstrual cycle, all 30-ish, 29 days where their hormones are, you know, up and down and they have different cycles and everything. This whole time, their body isn't going to be putting energy towards the release of those hormones. So this may be caused from a restricted type of eating disorder, such as anorexia or bulimia, or from excessive exercise as well. So women who are suffering from an eating disorder may have their ovulation and menstrual cycle resume once they begin normal eating behaviors and weight gain. And then on the other hand, we have the female athlete triad, which I don't know if you've ever heard about that. I know you were an athlete in high school.
Yeah.
So
I think I have, but I don't know anything about like in depth information.
Yeah. So basically it's where triad obviously means three, and it's where women who they're under eating and they're also participating in high levels of physical activity suffer from amenorrhea, eating disorder, and osteoporosis, which the first two you're probably like, oh yeah, totally makes sense. And then you're like, osteoporosis, yeah. What the heck? So women who suffer from the female athlete triad suffer from amenorrhea whenever they consume 30% less than their energy requirements. So obviously athletes already have such an increased energy need that, you know, it's probably going to be more than 2000 calories. And then you're eating probably less than that whenever you obviously need way more than that, especially like I know you swam, yeah. Which takes up tons.
I was
and
about
tons
to
of
say,
energy.
I think my sport, I ate more than most would, than I think other mm-hmm. sports, because I just trained for so many hours in the day.
Yeah,
just ate all the time.
Yeah, started out the day, yep. Ended the day, doing everything.
Yeah,
I know swimming. I did volleyball, and I know I didn't even require as many calories as swimming did. So
that's insane. What was it that Michael Phelps has to eat in a day?
Oh my gosh,
it was like.
Something like absolutely
ridiculous. Was it like 8,000 or something?
Yeah, like 10,
ridiculous.
8,000. It was, yeah.
That's so much.
Yep.
I don't even understand how you could consume that much food throughout the day.
No idea.
It's absolutely, absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, they're already consuming less than 30% of their energy requirements. And because of this, there's a decreased secretion of certain hormones, which are, you know, a lack of estrogen production and then a change in other hormone relations. And there are also metabolic changes that are going to be triggered by the shift in hormones. And it leads to a decrease in bone density as well and an increased probability of stress fractures. So you always hear about athletes who suffer from stress fractures. It's really a big part of this is because of this triad. They're not consuming enough energy, but they're also not consuming enough calcium. So their body is going in and they're taking calcium out of the bones to be able to put towards, you know, energy requirements and to put towards muscle contractions and everything else. So they're at a much higher, you know, risk of stress fractures from this. So to fix this, you're going to be focusing on fixing the negative energy balance and using supplements such as vitamin D, calcium, and others that you may be deficient in to restore your bone health. I just thought that was really interesting. And, you know, if anything else comes up about that, I do want to touch on that whenever we talk about, you know, specifically for athletes. I'm going to go more in depth and kind of look into a few case studies for that so that I can give some better examples as well. But that's just kind of like an overview of what undernutrition during preconception has an effect on. So on the other hand, we also have excessive body fat or a BMI of greater than 30 or higher. This can lead to you being subfertile, which doesn't mean you're infertile. You still have the ability to produce children, but you're just at a decreased ability to produce children. So obese women tend to have higher levels of estrogen, androgens, and leptin than non-obese women, leading to menstrual cycle irregularity. And because of this, the increased blood, insulin, reduced sex hormone, binding globulin, which is a whole mouthful, and that prompts the ovaries to produce more testosterone, leading to a disruption in egg development. So you still have the hormones and the ability to produce and reproduce, but you're just at a much, like a decreased ability to become pregnant, basically. I know you wanted to ask a question about having an increased BMI and getting pregnant.
Yeah, so we watch, or I see it on TikTok all the time, My 1,000-Pound Life, the sisters. And when you were reading that, like, I always knew that she had to get the surgery or whatever in order to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I guess I don't understand, like, does it not just take it off the fat? Like, I don't even know what the surgery does, but just not taking it off, like, would it not be her health underlying problems? Like, what else do you have to do? Like, so she had the surgery. Like, what else would she have to do in order to have kids? Like, you can't just get the surgery. I feel like there's more underlying health issues than just
So, yeah.
Looking fat.
What did she, do you know, I mean, I assume it was a bariatric surgery.
It was a gastric bypass. So what they did in that is they, like, reduced the size of her stomach so she couldn't consume as much food.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, and she feels full faster.
Yeah.
Okay, so it is kind of, like, her just, her nutrition as well, which is why she couldn't conceive because she was so.
Which is, I mean, it does take a lot of time. You do lose that fat. You lose the weight quickly whenever you have bariatric surgery. And I do plan on doing an episode in the future to talk about bariatric surgery because it is personally one of my favorite topics to talk about. But she basically, so you have the surgery and you are automatically at an increased risk for malnutrition, which you're, is probably really surprising to hear about because, you know, whenever you are thinking of a person who suffers from obesity, you're not really thinking malnutrition as, you know, a risk. But whenever you go through bariatric surgery, you aren't intaking as much food. Your stomach isn't digesting as much food. So your body isn't absorbing as much nutrient as it needs. So then you are having to supplement every single day for the rest of your life. Basically, you are on a very, very strict diet, a very strict routine. You're going to lose the weight quickly and it is the best weight loss method for people who are in class 3 obesity. It has been proven. It's not easy. So whoever out there is thinking like, oh, getting bariatric surgery is just the easy way out, it is absolutely not in any way, shape, or form. It is so difficult, and I think people who do it are very, very strong. But, yeah.
So just like a hard bounce back?
It is so hard, like, because before you get the surgery, you have to get into that routine of eating healthy, and you have to stick to that. It's really, like, you can't eat more than a cup of food at a time.
My cousin did it.
It's so crazy. But, I mean, a lot of people have awesome results on it.
3 cups of food a day.
Yeah. You're not supposed to drink water with your meals because you'll get filled in water and you won't be eating as much as you need to be healthy. Protein shakes. You'll eat a lot of protein shakes because you need to get the added calories because you just can't digest and absorb enough. So, I mean, to go back to your question, she will not be able to conceive right away.
Her body. I was going to ask, like, what that timeline is.
I don't know the specific timeline. I mean, her body does have to get into a routine. It has to get back to like a regular cycle. She still has to like lose that weight first of all and get back to it, have a healthy diet. But I mean, it's not going to take forever. Lose the weight pretty quickly on surgery.
Cool.
So yeah, that was interesting. A really awesome
I know, because I didn't even question it. And then I was like, literally just having the surgery doesn't make everything better. Like obviously it has to do with.
Oh yeah. She has to make sure she's sticking to that routine very, very strictly.
Yeah.
To make sure that she's able to like reach her goal, which is, I guess, conception.
Mm-hmm.
So also, again, men who are obese, it's also going to affect conception. So men tend to have a lower levels of testosterone and increased estrogen and leptin levels whenever they are obese. Leptin is the hunger hormone. Pretty sure. I always, for some reason in my head, that trips me up. I don't even know why, but it does every time. So this leads to a reduced sperm count and an increased probability of. Oh, I think I'm so confused. Well, no, I know. Leptin and ghrelin are the two hormones, and for some reason in my head, even when I was giving a presentation, I was just like, oh, I'm really going to forget which is which. And of course, I do right in the middle of this. So that really doesn't help. Just give me a second here. Okay, so leptin decreases your appetite, and ghrelin increases your appetite. There we go. That's what I needed, which made sense. Okay. So you're going to have a decreased sperm count and increased probability of erectile dysfunction, which really sucks. Men. It does. That sucks. That really sucks. Men have lower testosterone levels because the adipose tissue has an enzyme that converts testosterone to estradiol. I can't pronounce all those hormones, to be honest with you. And this is going to inhibit the secretion of LH and FSH, which are other hormones. And it's going to lower testosterone levels further and decrease the sperm production. What are y'all whispering about?
Should have questioned about erectile
dysfunction. Oh my gosh. Intra-abdominal fat in men is related to oxidative stress, which damages unsaturated fats and breaks down the fatty acid in sperm membranes. So more specifically, that's going to be like the fat that you find in your stomach region. So, you could be like super skinny man, like super skinny arms and legs, but you may have a lot of fat that's growing around in your like abdomen.
A little beer belly.
Yeah. So, which is really not healthy. And honestly, it goes a lot further than just related to oxidative stress and, breaks down sperm membranes. It's going to go further into, increasing your risk for diabetes and cardiovascular disease as well, which is something I do plan on talking about in the future. So just keep that in mind. And you can't target fat loss, just to let you know. You can't target fat loss. It doesn't work like that. The crunches aren't going to make the fat go away. You have to do cardio, which sucks. I'm sorry.
Cassie hates cardio.
I hate cardio. I hate it so much, but you can't target fat loss, which is just unfortunate. So individuals who suffer from obesity are first and foremost recommended to lose weight. During fertility counseling, they're going to help you out, but they are going to say you need to lose weight. That is going to be the easiest way and the most sure way to help you work towards conception. Fertility counseling isn't going to be recommended because a woman's menstrual cycle is going to be so thrown off from the upset of hormones that weight loss is going to bring that menstrual cycle back into a normal cycle and help to regulate the hormones. Weight reduction methods include becoming knowledgeable on portion sizes, meal prepping, and participating in regular physical activity.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So when you hit those like low lows of weight and those high highs of weight, like, can your body go back to like being fully healthy to conceive? Like, or is there always like, if you hit a super low or a super high, like, are you going to always struggle with it? Or can you genuinely like get back to like a healthy stage where you have like a healthy body in order to conceive? Or does it kind of like mess you up forever?
That's a good question. And I mean, I'm not as knowledgeable as I could be on this, not having gone through like the internship and everything. And it definitely depends on the person as well, because some people, can have where they, been so malnourished for so long, their metabolism isn't going to get up to where it needs to be, or, there can be lasting effects on the body. It just really depends on person to person, how far those effects, got. I mean, for a lot of people, I do think it's very possible for them to bounce back, to be completely healthy, to live that healthy lifestyle and not have those lasting effects.
Yeah, but I just didn't know if there was like a known underlying factor that will just kind of always be there if you hit something.
No, I mean, I can think like type 2 diabetes. So once you like reach the stage of being type 2 diabetes, you can get rid of it. Like, you can be insulin independent.
Yeah.
But again, you will have to focus more on your diet and making sure that you're keeping up with those carbs for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Like, there's not going to be a point where you can really stop focusing on that because your body has had all that stress put on it.
Yeah, you might just have to put in a little bit more.
Yeah, but it's not going to be, like, you're living a horrible life where you have to, like, be so stressed about what you're focusing on at all points.
Cool.
So just, like, a few fun, I mean, these aren't really like fun facts, but these are kind of like nutrient status in fertility. So antioxidants, which I just discussed in our previous episode, have been shown to improve sperm maturation, motility, concentration, and reduce DNA and chromosome damage. So please, antioxidants are amazing and beautiful. You should really be consuming those whether you're trying to have a child or not at all times. A zinc deficiency in men has been related to poor sperm quality, concentrations, and abnormal sperm shape. So don't have a zinc deficiency, basically.
What is that abnormal? What about, yeah, what does that do?
Abnormal sperm shape?
Yeah, so, well, like,
what's that outcome?
Basically, I mean, if a sperm's weird looking or, like, not shaped the way it needs to, it's not going to be able to, like, swim. So it's not going to reach the egg, and you're not going to be able to be fertilized.
Interesting. Huh.
So that would suck. And then, I mean, like, they can find that out, too, whether you do a blood test or they, you know, do, like, the sperm or they, like, look at your sperm and see how it is. They would be able to tell you if you have, like, an abnormal sperm shape and everything.
Yeah.
So soy, which I thought this was really controversial. I remember talking to a friend about this a few years ago. You know, there's this huge movement with soy. You know, soy is good for you. It's plant-based. It's a good source of protein and everything. It has been found to reduce sperm count in men and decrease fertility in women. I didn't get a chance to, like, go and look at the case studies that back this up, but it was in the textbook that I was reading. So, yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So, a lot, like, some, like, preschoolers are allergic to lactose intolerant, so they get soy milk for breakfast. Is that going to affect their fertility at that young of an age, or they bounce back from that, like, as they get older?
See, I don't, it's not fully understood, and I do think it's very much, like, large quantities. Gotcha. So, drinking soy milk, like,
because they probably finish it really
with their cereal.
I mean, yeah. Like, I just don't know. I mean, if you're consuming, you know, soybeans, tofu, soy milk, like, every single day, all the time, constantly, I feel like it's probably going to have some effect. But overall, I mean, daily, like, soy is a, it's a good source of a lot of things. So I'm not going to sit over here and be like, you know, against soy. I think I like soy. I drink soy milk. So, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I don't think, you know, having preschoolers drinking soy milk, you know, once a day isn't going to hurt anyone. But it is thought to have, like, be related to the influence of isoflavones on estriol, progesterone, and luteinizing hormone, which is the LH that I was talking about earlier. Having low iron stores has also been related to reduced fertility due to a lack of ovulation. So, just, you know, a lot of women suffer from low iron stores. I know probably almost everyone in this house, if not all of us, suffer from low iron. Yeah. So, caffeine has very much mixed results. I know everyone in this house drinks coffee. It has mixed results, and I am going to talk more about coffee whenever we talk about pregnancy, because I think, like, a lot of people are interested in that, and, you know, you hear, like, you can't have caffeine at all. Oh, my gosh, like, it's horrible when you're pregnant. Newsflash, like, that's not what the results are saying.
That's
so
my favorite news. I love that.
Yes, unless you're having, like, 4 cups of coffee a day, it's okay. You're fine. I can't say anything about how many Diet Cokes you have.
I can cut Diet Cokes if I ever get pregnant. My 1 cup of coffee in the morning is going to be necessary.
Not going to hurt you. So alcohol. Yes, alcohol has an effect on fertility. It increases testosterone levels and affects sperm levels in men, and reducing fertility only in women who have a gene variant that reduces the rate of alcohol breakdown in the body. So, if you're talking about the gene variant, it's most often found in those who are of Asian descent. They do have, some people do have a gene variant that means they break down alcohol a lot slower than other people. Other than that, alcohol probably isn't going to have a huge effect, but you probably should not be attempting to conceive while both people are intoxicated. One, consent. Two, just...
Wouldn't put that in there.
Two, just, you know, the effects of alcohol and pregnancy is already just so negative, you really don't want to
risk it. So it can happen, like, that can affect it, like, in the act of, like, conception. If you're intoxicated.
Just the effect that it has on hormones and sperm and everything else. It's just, I mean, like, I don't know all the research that goes behind it, but it is just, like, a good rule of thumb. Like,
yeah,
don't attempt to.
Okay, conceive. So say someone, like, is, like, figuring, like, didn't plan to get pregnant, and they figure out they're pregnant, like, whatever, later on. Like, and they continue to drink. Is that going to have a huge effect, like, that early on?
How early on?
I don't know, but like between the phase that they figure out that they're actually pregnant.
I mean, fetal alcohol syndrome is really awful.
Can that be like super crucial throughout the whole pregnancy, or is there like times during pregnancy where it can be most?
There's definitely times because, like, I'm going to talk about in pregnancy and, like, what I'm going to talk about in just a few seconds with folate, you need that at a very specific time.
Yeah.
And then throughout the whole pregnancy. So I'm sure that when it comes to alcohol, there is a certain point when it is most likely to cause issues. But I would say if you're drinking at any point throughout your pregnancy, it's just not safe. You don't want to risk it. You don't want to, like, put the chance that something is going to happen to your child. It's just so many awful things can happen when it comes to fetal alcohol syndrome that you don't want to risk it.
So sad.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Taylor.
Can I add on to that?
Yeah.
It's bad, like, at any point in time of pregnancy, but it's going to increase the further along pregnant you are. Like, you'll start, like, in the middle of your second trimester and then on. This one's, like the risk is the highest.
Oh, cool.
But like, either way, it's
the second trimester. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the second trimester, you absolutely do not want to touch alcohol.
Get it together. So yeah, if you were to like drink like a little bit and stuff, and like, you were pregnant and you were to stop, the chances of like that happening are impossible, but slim. Then
which just happens probably to a lot of people
I'm sure that happens.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So the last two things I want to touch on are nutrition during preconception, like the periconceptional period. And this is the stage whenever you are conceiving, I guess. It's like this very short window between like preconception and pregnancy. The first thing I want to talk about is folate, which is something Reagan and I have discussed quite a few times already. It is so, 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 so important in your very early stages. I mean, like 3 to 4 weeks after conception, which is at some time, like women do not even know they are pregnant during this time. So you have to be supplementing folic acid, also known as folate, whenever you're planning or attempting to become pregnant, even if you're not.
That's why you just go ahead and throw it in your vitamins.
Yeah, take that multivitamin. Take that women's multivitamin that already has it in there. Because if you're not consuming adequate amounts of folic acid whenever you conceive, there's an increased risk of the fetus developing neural tube defects, which is like something like spina bifida. And folate is absolutely necessary in DNA replication as it is a component of enzymatic reactions involved in amino acid synthesis and vitamin metabolism. So supplementation of folate and folic acid also lowers a risk of delivery of a baby who is small for gestational age, which is exactly what it means. It's just a baby that is very small for their age, such as like giving birth to a baby that's maybe like 5 pounds, whenever like I guess the typical baby's like what, like seven to nine being on the higher end. Go ahead, be taking that multivitamin. That's all I have to say. Women's multi literally has everything in it that you need. Please take it daily. And then iron. So if you're iron deficient before conception, it is likely that you will have an iron deficiency during pregnancy, leading to babies being born with low iron stores. There's also an increased risk of preterm delivery when suffering from iron deficiencies. So to build up those stores, you know, consume your vitamin C-rich foods along with your heme sources of iron. Wow. And on the other end, it is recommended to not consume calcium at the same time as iron. So, because that's going to reduce your iron absorption. I know we talked about all this in the last episode. It's just so important, especially when we're talking about conception and preconception. So, 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 so important. Yeah, that is all I have for preconception. So, we're going to move into pregnancy. Okay, so now we're going to move on to talking about pregnancy. So pregnancy causes many physiological changes in the mother. Changes to your water volume in a mother's body is going to be due to the increased volumes of plasma and extracellular fluid that are going to be needed to expand blood flow and nutrient transfer from your placenta to the fetus. And the metabolism of the mother is also affected within the first few weeks post-conception. So according to the review, placental hormones and the control of maternal metabolism and fetal growth, in the beginning of her pregnancy, a mother will begin to consume more to promote uteroplacental development. A 60% rise in insulin secretion stimulates lipogenesis and reduces fatty acid oxidation, promoting maternal fat storage. So if you notice weight gain, that's what is happening. So during the second trimester, hormones inhibit the fat storage and there's a rise in insulin resistance so that the glucose consumed is provided for the fetus and the mother is going to rely more on fats for her energy, which I personally thought was really interesting. So the fetus wants to use glucose and sugars as their primary source of energy, where a mother is going to be using fats as their primary source of energy now at this stage. So pregnant women are still recommended to consume 45% to 65% of their calories from carbs and a minimum of 175 grams of carbs daily. It is essential for mothers to increase their consumption of proteins during pregnancy in order to provide the necessary amino acids to synthesize new maternal and fetal tissue. We discussed a few episodes ago that protein is not stored in the same way that carbs and fats are, so mothers should be consuming adequate amount of protein daily to ensure that healthy development. The recommended intake of protein during pregnancy is about 71 grams daily. So during pregnancy, fat is utilized more readily by the mother, and so there are high concentrations of cholesterol and triglycerides observed. The increase is necessary for steroid hormone synthesis by the placenta and nerve and cell membrane formation by the fetus. 13 grams of linoleic acid and 1.4 grams of other essential fatty acids should be consumed daily to promote healthy tissue development of the fetus. I know Reagan has a question about fats because a lot of your healthy fats are going to be found in fish. So she had a really good question about consuming seafood during pregnancy.
Yeah, one of my main concerns is, like, I just keep hearing, like, all right, I can't drink coffee. I can't have Diet Coke. I can't have sushi. Like, these are all my main, like, my main top things. Also, you can't ride roller coasters, can you?
Yeah, don't. That's unfortunate. You don't want to be riding roller coasters.
So, anyways, why can't I eat sushi?
So, you can. Basic. Okay, so I don't know so much about seafood because how it's prepared, you aren't... Okay, so I'm not gonna... Raw fish. Raw fish is not what you want to be consuming because a lot of times you're going to be having, like, parasites, those little worms that you find in raw fish. I don't know if you've seen the videos on, like, YouTube or, like, people who are like, oh my gosh, so this little parasite, yeah. So basically, raw fish can have a lot of contaminants, a lot of parasites that are just going to put the mother and the fetus at risk. But in terms of cooked food, so if you had, like, a cooked sushi, like a deep fried, I know, like...
Does that really make that much of a difference?
Yeah.
Like, I could have a deep fried sushi?
Depends on the fish. So you want to be consuming...
Like, I mainly have, like, crab. And some salmon in there.
Well, that's crab isn't a fish.
Well,
so
seafood, does that count?
I think you're okay.
I literally have no idea. I know this from, like, watching movies.
Okay, so when we're talking about fish, you want it to be cooked, and seafood such as fish, cooked fish, shrimp, canned light tuna, and other fish low in mercury should be consumed twice a week to ensure adequate consumption of DHA and EPA. Huh. You want to be consuming fish while you're pregnant.
Yeah.
But it just depends on the specific type of fish and that it's cooked. Yeah.
What if you don't want to? What could you do instead?
You can be taking, like, supplemental fish oils.
Fish oils and that's really...
Yeah. Cool. Your body, no matter what, really wants to be taking in things through your diet. But if you absolutely hate fish and you are not going to be eating them or you're scared, no matter what, yeah. Get the fish oil, get the supplements, you know, whatever you think you might need. So, like I said, it has been drilled into women's head that you shouldn't be consuming fish. You're afraid of mercury poisoning. As long as you aren't consuming fish like swordfish, king mackerel, tallowfish, or shark, you're safe to eat fish. You want to be consuming those low mercury cooked fishes.
So I have to eat cooked salmon all day.
Yeah.
I love cooked salmon.
Where's your salmons? Salmon's, yeah. Tuna. Tuna's a really good one.
I love tuna.
I'm pretty sure salmon's, like, okay a few nights. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, also, I know, just in today's society, we are, like, terrified of weight gain. Even pregnant women, for some reason, so, you know, some have, like, a fear of this weight gain. You have to gain weight. It is necessary for you to gain weight. Because, like, it's just so important.
I see some, like, crazy people who, like, work out hardcore during their whole entire pregnancy. Is that, like, not healthy, or is that healthy?
I think as long as they're still gaining the recommended weight and they're still eating enough, like, mm-hmm. being healthy, it's not, you know, as long as they're not, like, stressing themselves out to the max, putting way too much stress on their bodies, not taking care of themselves, working out is fine.
Yeah. I mean, know I relate a lot back to, like, reality TV, but when Khloe Kardashian was pregnant, mm-hmm. she was, like, trying to, like, figure out, like, gaining the healthy amount of weight and then, like, trying to keep it off, and, like, mm-hmm. she would go to the doctor and they were like, you need to eat a little bit more, because she was worried about having a C-section. Is that what?
Oh,
I don't know. I feel like that's what they were concerned about. Like, she wanted to be healthy enough and strong enough and wanted to have, like, the right amount of, like,
I mean,
I don't know. I feel like that's a topic they talk about.
That, I feel like that's a good question. I mean, in terms of, like, working out to not have a C-section, the only thing I can even think of is, like, having the muscle capability of, like, pushing a child out.
I don't even know if it was in the context of, like, you want to gain this certain amount of weight, and, like, she was working out so much that the doctor was like, it's okay to, like,
relax. There are weight requirements. Like,
yeah.
There are definitely some really good resources where you can, I mean, you can go online and you can look up, like, the recommended weight gain for your BMI, because your pre-pregnancy weight status influences the relationship between weight gain and your birth weight. So, like, say I think right now I'm at, like, a BMI of 23. I fall into a specific, like, chart where I want to be gaining, like, this much weight during my pregnancy to have a healthy birth. And that's going to be different for everyone, but it definitely does depend on your BMI.
Is that more on the concern of the mother or the child?
Well, like I just said, how much weight you gain during your pregnancy is going to relate to the child's birth weight. Okay. So, like, if I don't consume enough, you know, nutrient throughout my pregnancy and I don't gain enough weight, they're going to have a low birth weight, which is going to put them at risk for...
I forget about that connection.
That's different. Crazy. Yeah. Where on the other hand, like, I guess if I were to consume too much during my pregnancy, there's a good chance that they would have a high birth weight, which, you know, could lead to other complications down the line as well. So you do want to make sure that you are conscious about where you're falling into those weight categories during your pregnancy. And just kind of as, like, a basic type deal, it's recommended that a mother gains a little less than half a pound per week in their second half of the pregnancy, and then a less than 3/4 of a pound per week in the third trimester. So that's just kind of like a little – you'll use it more whenever you're, like, in these classes and you have to calculate things, but this is really the only class I used it for so far. I can't say that for the future, but, yeah, it's a little bit of math. As far as your intake of just, like, calories goes, you want to be consuming an extra 300 calories per day to compensate for the increased needs due to protein and fat tissue synthesis. Since your body is working so hard to produce all these tissues in making a baby and forming a baby, you need to be consuming a lot of extra calories. The DREIs are about 1340 calories during the second trimester and 1450 calories during the third trimester, or about 340 kcals to 452 kcals for the second and third trimester, like, additionally on top of, like, what you should be consuming, basically. So moving on to micronutrients needs during pregnancy, you know, we've already discussed folate. We just talked about it. Just because it's really necessary during preconception doesn't mean that you don't need to worry about it once you conceived and once those like 4 weeks have passed. You definitely still need it throughout the whole pregnancy. And it's very interesting because like we in the United States have seen a decrease in kind of those abnormalities because we fortify all of our grains. So all of our refined grains, your breads, your cereals, everything. Taylor, you eat cereal like every single day. All has folate in it because we saw that there was an issue with folate deficiencies and we started fortifying. Yeah, it's a good thing. basically, you want 400 micrograms of folic acid from fortified foods, so those grains and everything, and supplements, and then 200 from veggies and fruits. Choline, which I don't even know if I ever call it this. It's really just not familiar to me, to be honest with you. It's another B complex vitamin. It's necessary for neural tube and brain development and the conversion of homocysteine to methionine. The RDA for choline during pregnancy is 450 micrograms daily. It's much higher than the average intake. You're going to find this in eggs and beef as the highest sources and then other meats as follows. For some reason, people have a problem with eggs. And I think it was that, what's that, Netflix? What the Health?
Oh, you know,
have you heard about that? Yeah. And they made the like the stupid, crazy claim that they were like eating an egg is comparable to smoking like a pack of cigarettes or like five cigarettes. It was like the
specifically during pregnancy.
No, just like eggs in general.
What?
And I was like, it was just really, really stupid. Basically, I started it and it started saying that, and I was like, I have to turn this off because this is so stupid. You need choline. Choline's in eggs. It's really that simple. Yes, eggs are high in cholesterol. It's not going to kill you. Eggs are healthy. Everything is healthy in moderation. That's what we're going off of. So there you go. So next we're going to talk about vitamin A. This was the fat soluble vitamin. It, you know, you're not likely to have a deficiency. On the other hand, a vitamin A toxicity in the form of excessive retinol or retinoic acid, I'm just going to call it retinol, increases the risk of fetal abnormalities or retinal acid syndrome. So it's characterized by small or no ears, lack of ear canals, brain malformation, and head defects. So this is very interesting because I didn't know that Accutane contains apparently like a ton of vitamin A. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, what do they tell you, I guess, like about it specifically?
Yeah, the first time I went on Accutane, I think I was like a freshman in high school and they were drilling it down my throat and it was like a little overwhelming. So when you get on Accutane, like you have to go through like this form, you have to sign waivers, you have to be approved for this program, you have to get on and do all of these things. And that made me take like pregnancy tests every month. Mm-hmm. And when I was a freshman, and then I also was just recently on it. And but they give you a book that you're supposed to read and everything, and they show you pictures of like the you know, what the outcome can be of it or whatever. But they just make you get on like this program, and you have to like, they say don't get pregnant, but you have to say like what the forms of conception or whatever you're using, contraception, like birth control and stuff like that. But they kind of just like drill it down your throat. They show you pictures to scare you, but they don't really go in behind like the science part of it. Like it's just, I was just like, they're just like, don't get pregnant. I was like, okay, solid. Got it. But I never knew.
Yeah.
I had no idea like the science behind it. I'm sure it was deep down in that book somewhere, but
yeah,
I'm not going to read it.
Yeah. I mean, like I was never personal in Accutane. So like I didn't ever see the book what they give you, but I know a lot of people who have been on Accutane.
Yeah, when you pull like every pill off, like on the back of the pill like cover, it's like a pregnant person with like a circle with a line through it. Like,
oh my gosh.
Every single pill, every single month you have to go on, like it's crazy.
That is absolutely wild. I mean, it's really good that they're taking all the precautions. Mm-hmm. It's just so
Yeah. Crazy. They definitely scare you. 100%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, they definitely, it works. I was like, okay.
So if you're on Accutane or you know someone on Accutane, don't get pregnant. Don't let them get pregnant. Use contraceptives. Everything. Be smart. Vitamin D and calcium. Obviously, these two go hand in hand. Vitamin D is necessary to absorb calcium and promote healthy bones and teeth development. Dental caries may also develop in relation to vitamin D deficiency. That being said, the recommendations for vitamin D are 15 micrograms daily through fortified foods such as milk, or, you know, just go outside if you're someplace where you get like good UV. About 15 minutes outside is really all you need. Anything more than that, obviously, please wear sunscreen. That, you know, just wear sunscreen. Sunscreen is not gonna like affect your ability. You might have to spend like an extra few minutes outside, but in the long run, it's gonna protect you way more than anything else. So please wear sunscreen. The recommendations for calcium, it's increased in the last quarter of pregnancy to 300 milligrams per day to account for the high rate of bone mineralization in the fetus. So all those growing bones, which personally really freaks me out with how many bones babies have, but it's really scary. But yeah, you know, drink your milk and everything else. Iron is so important whenever we're discussing prenatal health, as many women suffer from iron deficiencies, like we just talked about, and the rates of iron deficiencies do increase during pregnancy. You're at an increased risk for preterm delivery and low birth weight infant, as well as compromising the iron stores of the infant as well. For this reason, iron supplements are recommended to be consumed daily at about 30 milligrams, but if you are deficient, you may be prescribed to take anywhere from 60 to 180 milligrams per day, which is a lot. You may be able to consume enough iron throughout the day by eating about, you know, 27 milligrams of calcium iron from heme sources while also increasing your vitamin C intake, which consume less calcium whenever you're consuming iron. Also, side note, apparently iron like makes you really constipated whenever you're taking supplements. I don't know if you ever suffered from...
My friend did.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Pretty bad.
I think like maybe my granddad told me that. He was like, oh yeah, I took iron supplements once and like apparently they can really mess up your bowel movements. So just be conscious of that.
Do you
really
want to take iron supplements like early on, like you do folic acid, or is it just like when you're pregnant if you know you have a deficiency?
Would
it help to take it even if you don't necessarily have like a super deficiency?
Yeah. I mean, as a woman, it's going to help no matter what. But like if you know you don't have like a deficiency, mm-hmm. just taking a multivitamin that has iron in it is going to be helpful. If you know you have a deficiency, definitely be taking it. But I don't think that there's like a certain time. I think it's just like throughout the whole pregnancy, you want to make sure that you're like adequately consuming enough. So I personally think the discussion of thyroid health has become a lot more common. I've seen a lot of people on TikTok talking about their thyroid health. I don't know. I think I asked you that the other day, if you'd seen those if any of you guys have seen like the TikToks about people's thyroids.
You're on a different side of TikTok.
I really am. basically, it's like a lot of people coming forward and talking about like hypothyroidism and how like their experience with it. It's just, I've seen a lot about it. It's definitely an important discussion here, as hypothyroidism develops during pregnancy in the fetus. So iodine is so important for fetal health, as it promotes healthy thyroid and brain development, as well as energy production, and the daily recommended intake is about 220 micrograms. Iodine can be found in iodized salt, which if you're consuming that daily with food, you're going to prevent your need for supplementation. If you don't have iodized salt, which you can get at the store, so I don't know why you wouldn't, potassium iodide is found, you know, is also recommended if you're going to be supplementing that. So, you know, whichever one you choose, you just really need to make sure that you're consuming adequate amounts of iodine. It's so important. Because hypothyroidism can cause a lot of health conditions in the future for your child. So the last of the micronutrients during pregnancy that I have to talk about is sodium. We did kind of touch base on this and how it is for how important it is to help with body signaling, but it's also like the key component of water balance in the body. So during pregnancy, sodium needs are increased due to like how much water volume and plasma volume you have in your body. There's not really a set recommendation, but you want to be consuming normal amounts of sodium, and you do not want to have a sodium restriction during pregnancy unless you have some other health condition that requires you to have something going on with sodium. So unless you have like some cardiac issues or renal issues, you do not need to be concerned about your sodium and sodium restrictions. This is the fun one we get to talk about, where we talk about antioxidants and caffeine. These are bioactive food components that have been studied in their effects on pregnancy. I know we just talked about antioxidants. They're definitely increased during pregnancy to protect DNA from damage due to exposure to oxygen and other chemicals. They're also necessary to reduce maternal tissue damage from the inflammatory processes during pregnancy. So you do want to be consuming those antioxidants all the time, constantly. Fresh fruits and veggies, just be taking them. Fun fact, vitamin E can reduce the risk of asthma in newborns, as it may reduce the inflammation in the lungs. So if you are concerned about your child developing asthma, or maybe like have asthma, definitely like maybe supplement vitamin E, or make sure that you're consuming foods with a lot of vitamin E. I just thought that was really fun. Overall, you really want to be consuming about 5 cups of fruits and vegetables a day. Caffeine is also a hot topic when discussing pregnancy, but evidence linking caffeine to pregnancy complications is very, very, very weak. Consuming moderate amounts of caffeine daily is not going to pose any health risks to the fetus.
Love that.
So congrats, you guys. You can still have your cup of coffee. I think that the studies where they kind of talked about this, it was like crazy. It's like 4 cups a day, and I mean, like, I guess
Diet Cokes in between.
Yeah, I mean, to some people, 4 cups of coffee is like a normal amount, but anywhere from like, I think the book said it was like 3 cups or less, you're fine. Like, it's not gonna hurt you or the fetus at all. So I thought that was interesting.
The people that I know that have been pregnant have drank coffee.
Yeah, just, I mean, like, don't go crazy. Don't, you know, anything like that. But yeah, you're not gonna, you know, hurt yourself doing that. So lastly, you may be facing some common health problems during pregnancy. So here are some tips to prevent or treat those. Nausea and vomiting. Basically, stay away from strong smells that tend to make you nauseous. Separate liquids and solid food intake. So, you know, while you're eating, don't go chugging a glass of water in between each bite. That's probably gonna help a bit. No certain food is going to cause nausea and vomiting. It's very, very specific to yourself. So anyone who's going to tell you, oh my gosh, you have to stay away from this specific food, it's going to make you sick. No, it's not. It really depends on who you are as a person. Supplements may assist in the management, and that's going to include like vitamin B6, ginger. A lot of people were like, chew on ginger, and that's going to help like your stomach. I think Savannah, don't you do like peppermint? Nausea and vomiting, peppermint can help as well. If vomiting continues to be a very large problem, consult your physician, as severe cases can increase your risk of miscarriage. So just be aware of like how long that lasts, really. Heartburn. Reagan, you had a good question about spicy.
Oh yeah. I just like also like I had heard that you can't eat sushi. I heard that you can't eat like spicy foods when you're pregnant.
Yeah. Really, I think this just relates right back to heartburn, because, you know, if you have heartburn, you have acid reflux, you know, anything spicy is really gonna affect that. And you already have a baby basically pressing up against every single one of your organs, so your acid is already up towards your pyloric sphincter. So like, why?
Makes sense.
I don't think it was pyloric sphincter is what I wanted to say, but esophageal sphincter. That's what it
was.
There you go. I was, you know, one of those sphincters. Yeah, so it's already going to be weakened right now. Spicy food probably isn't going to help that. So if you are suffering from heartburn, you just want to ingest small and frequent meals. You don't want to overload your stomach. Don't lay down with a full stomach. Avoid spicy foods or chocolate. Chocolate can also cause heartburn. Consume plenty of fiber and elevate your upper body during sleep. And lastly, if you're suffering from constipation, lots of fiber, lots of water. That is the best advice throughout anything with constipation, is fiber and water. So lastly, I just want to talk about some key points that we went over in this episode. First, healthy people 2020 nutrition objective for preconception focused on improving weight status prior to pregnancy, decreasing alcohol consumption around the time of conception, decreasing inadequate iron and folate status, and expanding the utilization of periconceptional care services. So that's going to include any of your care services that are there specifically to help women who are pregnant or becoming pregnant. WIC is an amazing resource for women who are pregnant and do not have the necessary resources. They're phenomenal. A lot of times your local health department will have someone there who can help you out. So definitely check them out. And that's WIC, Women, Infant, Child. So 2, dietary intake, supplement use, weight status, and body fat content affect the development and maintenance of a person's biological capacity to reproduce. 3, inadequate and excessive levels of body fat, weight loss in normal weight individuals, oxidative stress and chronic inflammation, low antioxidant intake from vegetables and fruits, high alcohol intake, eating disorders, certain chronic health problems, high soy food diets, inadequate zinc status, and heavy metal exposure are related to fertility. 4, many aspects of nutritional status, such as dietary intake, supplement use, and weight change, influence the course and outcome of pregnancy. 5, fetal growth and development is generally due to environmental factors such as energy, nutrient, and oxygen availability. Essential nutrients must be available in required amounts when needed for healthy growth. And 6, not all pregnant individuals will need supplements during pregnancy. Food intake should provide the needed calories and nutrients. So that's all I have today for, you know, preconception and pregnancy. And I have all of my sources listed in the show notes. And I really encourage you guys to check those out if you have any other questions. And, you know, that's really all I have.
Yeah, so. Thanks. It's fun. I mean, essentially, we'll be the first to admit I don't know a lot of anything, so it's fun to listen and know.
Well, glad that you were able to sit in. And the next one, we will be talking about lactation and infant nutrient needs. So I think that one will also be really interesting, and I hope you guys listen in. Bye.
Bye.